Jeff, alcoholic?
Hi, Jeff.
Good to be here. Good to be sober. I hadn't turned around to notice there's a whole lot of people here. I've been doing this quite a few years, and every time I do it, I get nervous. And I remember when I was new, my sponsor said, "Jeff, talk about it. It takes the power out of it. Doesn't work." Okay. Doesn't work, hasn't worked, but I've been taking direction and doing this for 28 years now, which is kind of amazing because I got sober when I was 28, and I'm kind of going, wow, that means half my life I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. Pretty remarkable for a guy like me. Before we get going here, I love to talk about me, but one of the things that I was taught is that I was taught that it isn't service unless it's inconvenient. And so I want to mention to you just how damn inconvenient this is for me to come to put on a tie, to put on a coat, to come and do this. I mean, I really don't want to do this, okay? But one of the things I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is that we say yes. But before you go ahead and buy into some of my inconvenience, I need to kind of mention someone else who you might have noticed I came in a wheelchair. I know, I snuck in. But I have muscular dystrophy. And so when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I did walk in the door. So when I say things like walked in, I probably did. But the muscular dystrophy, what happens is that I can might continually lose muscle. And so when we talk about inconvenience, then I have to kind of mention my wife because, you know, I kind of like the applause coming this direction, but, you know, without the wife, I can't wash the hair. I can't get out of bed. I can't get dressed. I mean, I can't do many things in a daily life. And if there's someone that really deserves a round of applause, it's my wife, Bev. Not supposed to be more than mine. You know, I talk about being nervous on doing some of this, and then the other night I'm at my book study, and some of these knuckleheads started talking to me about this non-verbal communication, as if I do that, you know? I'm thinking, now I've got to worry about this crap, you know? Yes, Chris. Welcome to the newcomers. I think there were 9 of you. I hope you found what I have found here. Our requirements are fairly liberal. The only requirement is a desire to stop drinking. That's the good news. Bad news is it takes a whole lot of pain to get that desire. So, if you're not done yet, I wish you a lot of pain. You know, I think when I think about this is so often you hear about carrying the message, and sometimes we get mixed up about carrying the alcoholic. And quite frankly, without a bottom, we don't stay. And so I don't catch them, you know. If you're not done, go get it done. By God, if it's still fun, go have fun, you know. By God, if I could drink and have fun, I can tell you I would not be at this meeting tonight, okay? You know, my image, of course, is kind of a spiritual giant. That wasn't the funny part. And so some of you old-timers have probably heard the prayer, Footprints in the Sand, and I have another one, and I ran into it years ago, and it's kind of similar, but it's more like, well, the guys I hang out with at the book study and the step study and my men's group. And, you know, guys, by the way, they don't yell stuff out here. okay? And yes, those are women, don't stare, okay? That's the guys I hang out with. We're not used to doing this, okay? Not a lot of social activity for us. This one's called Butt Prints in the Sand. One night I had a wondrous dream. One set of footprints there was seen, the footprints of my precious Lord, but mine were not along the shore. And then some strange prints appeared, and I asked the Lord, where have we here? Those prints are large and round and neat, but Lord, they are too big for feet. My child, he said in somber tones, for miles I carried you along. I challenged you to work in faith, but you refused and made me wait. You disobeyed, you would not grow. The walk of faith you would not know. So I got tired, I got fed up, and there I dropped you on your butt. Because in life there comes a time when one must fight and one must climb, when one must rise and take a stand, or leave their butt prints in the sand. Newcomers, the program's outlined in that big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It has all the information you need. It will also protect you from people like me. I highly recommend getting a sponsor. I recommend reading that book, by the way. I recommend taking the steps. But most of all, what I hope you do is I hope you find a God. Or a power greater than yourself, because if they didn't mention to you yet, this is a spiritual program. Okay? In fact, the book says finding a power greater than yourself which will solve your problem is exactly what this book is about. Okay? And I heard someone one time say, well, I have a tough time with the spiritual part of this program. You know, what other part is there? You know, all the actions in this program are spiritual. Okay? So, you know, that may not be what you wanted to hear tonight, but it's the truth. Okay? And if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be here today. I don't know when I was became alcoholic. I think I kind of just came out that way. I can tell you the first day of kindergarten, I remember watching the kids riding their trikes around and thinking, man, I really want to ride one of them trikes. But I really didn't want to ask anyone, and I kind of thought they should come and ask me anyway. And so I just kind of got irritated about the whole thing. And then I went in and I thought, what the hell? And I watched them playing with these toys, and I thought, I have better toys at home. I really don't want to stick around for this crap. And so I watched some little boy build some castle, you know. I mean, what the hell? I didn't have nothing else to do. And I remember at the end of the class, and the teacher said that we had to clean up. And I said, even me. And I'm thinking, I didn't even play. I'm not cleaning nothing up. And she said, yes, you will. So I went over, and I thought, I'm going to kick over that kid's castle. So I have something to clean up. And so the very first day of kindergarten, I was after school. When I got out there, we were moving that week, so I was standing there with the crossing guard, and I'm thinking, uh-oh, because no one's there to pick me up. I guess my folks had gotten mixed up. They were told a different time. And I was kind of thinking, they found out what I did at school first day. I mean, this could be over here. So I'm trying to buddy up pretty much with the crossing guard, because I thought this may be a long-term commitment that he and I are going to be involved in. And so I guess nothing much changed the rest of my life, okay? I mean, that's my school. I was always the guy that they said, you know, he's just kind of a confused young man, you know? If he would just put in a little more effort, you know? Which was very difficult because my sister was, like you, getting straight A's, you know, and coming home with perfect report cards, and mine were not. And so she was always very quiet, and of course I am not, and she was shy, and I'm not. And so there were, you know, a lot of comparisons growing up. And, you know, My parents divorced when I was 9. Had no reason at all as to why I drank. I think I saw my dad more often after they got divorced than I did when they were married. And, you know, my parents both loved me, and, you know, I got had a pretty good life. I was fortunate in the fact that my dad set up aluminum plants all over the world. And so every summer I'd go stay with my dad. And so we lived in Istanbul, Turkey, and we were in Italy and Venezuela, and, you know, we were Iran, and I've been all over the world, and I was very, very, very fortunate to have been able to do that, especially looking back in the wheelchair now, not being able to travel that much. And like to tell you that I appreciated it then, but quite frankly, I took it all for granted, and I really tried to find places that I could drink. I particularly liked the Heineken Brewery. What I remember was the first summer we were in Istanbul, Turkey, and I remember walking down the sidewalk, and I think we were probably about 13, and one of the cafes on the sidewalk had said, "Come here, come here," and so they said, "You can eat and drink all you want if we can take your picture." So, you know, without a lot of thought involved, I thought that was a pretty decent idea. So we did. And so we sat and we ate and we drank and we drank and drank. And weeks later, we went to the movie theater. And as we're sitting there, the whole family, my dad, my stepmom, all this, up on the big screen is Jeff and his brother drinking, 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 and eating. And I didn't need to look to the right. I didn't need to know what direction this was coming, you know? You know, high school was pretty much the same thing. You know, when I found alcohol, man, I found it, man. Up until that point, I just didn't feel like I fit. And, man, I found alcohol, and I fit, and I became funny, and I became, you know, a good looking. I became everything I'd ever wanted to be, you know. And a lot of people were putting effort into being, like, school, you know, like studying to, like, go to college and stuff like that. But I didn't find that urgent. And I had kind of thought that what I would do is I would probably go into, like, be a radio DJ guy and be really funny, probably like Johnny Carson within about 3 years, you know, something like that, probably retire by 28. And so I didn't really do anything in school. And so every now and then they would say, if you don't do something in school, pretty soon we're going to throw you out. And I'd get pretty busy so that I didn't get thrown out. And I had graduated from high school. Shocked me as much as it did everyone else. And I got out into the world, and man, what I found was that there were some outside issues that helped me. It was like PF Flyers, you know. I could drink faster, longer, jump higher. I mean, I could see colors brighter with some of the things I did. I could. There were some side of it. I mean, I remember the paranoia thing. I remember peeking out the blinds at times. I remember one time standing in a store and not remembering I was there, and kind of surprised me when she said, "Can I help you?" But you know, I rolled with it. I rolled with it. Kept drinking like that. Had some problems in relationships. Go figure. Sometimes, like, maybe a couple weeks we'd be involved, but nothing lasted very long with me. And I'm looking back, and I'm wondering if maybe not being honest might have been a real detriment on some of those relationships. Not allowing any intimacy as far as who I am or what I am, any of those things, I just wouldn't do that. And the book talks about our inability to form true partnerships, and that was definitely me. I That didn't stop me from obsessing over women. Matter of fact, it didn't stop me from obsessing so much over women that I decided to live two different lives, which consisted of two different houses, and that was tough. I mean, that was tough. And trying not to let her in on either side, you know, it's tough. I remember when she left, and I kept thinking, what? I mean, I bought her everything. What the hell does she want, you know? So, anyway, I didn't get it. But I got it enough that I thought, man, I can't do this, and I'm depressed, and I don't know if I can live like this anymore. And so my solution was, I was going to move to the river, because I noticed that they drink like I do. And I thought, if you could find me a little, like a dishwashing job, that I could drink like I like to drink, this thing could probably work out that way. And I ran it by my dad. And my dad was back in Riverside for a little bit, and he said, well, why don't you move in with us a little while? And I said, until you figure things out. I thought, kind of had, but, you know, what the heck? I mean, I don't have any money. And so I moved in with them, and that experiment, it seemed to work really well for me, because they had a pool and food at lunchtime and dinner, and no one ever asked for money. And every now and then, I think my stepmom, in a kind of a passive-aggressive way, would bang the door a little bit when she was vacuuming. And it was a little irritating, but, you know, I'm not going to let on to it, you know. I like to get up right around 11:30. Got to be ready for when Dad comes home for lunch. I want to look good, you know. So anyway, I remember my dad comes home for lunch one day, and he said to me, he said, hey, Jeff, he says, I have someone coming over for dinner, and I'm hoping that you will stay for dinner, and I want you to shave, I want you to bathe, and I want you to dress up. And he thought, well, what the heck, I mean, it's a free meal. So, you know, I did that, and before the night was up, this man kept saying, Jeff, you know what? You want to come back? I got a job for you in South Carolina. You know? You just call. I'd really like you to come to work for me. And so I went. I went to bed that night, and I'm thinking, so they want me to come to work for them. Now, I'm sure my dad had nothing to do with this. You know? No, I'm thinking this guy probably came into the room, and he's thinking, you know what I could really use? A really confused young drunk. You know, I could... Yeah, I'd like someone whose life is a wreck right about now, looking for a bottom, and I'll give him a new start. And so I said to my dad, hey, you know, you offer me a job, what do you think? And my dad said, well, that's kind of up to you. Because my dad had said, well, you know, if he had told me he thought I should take it, I wouldn't have gone. I wouldn't have gone, because I kind of don't take direction from anyone, you know. If you think it's a good idea, I just don't, you know. And so, you know, so I'm off to South Carolina. But I need to tell you, just before I left, I was living in this little place, and I mean little. It was probably about 350 square feet, which was good because all my dirty clothes covered all the flooring in it. And one morning, it was a Sunday morning, some guy knocks on my door at like 11, you know, and I open the door, and I'm thinking, why is someone here this early, you know? And luckily I was still awake, and so he came in and he said, hey Jeff, I'm on my way to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Would you like to go? I'm thinking, no. No, I don't think that sounds interesting at all, quite frankly. And I'm thinking to myself, I've got a man-sized bottle of vodka, a man-sized bottle of Kahlua. Why would I go to Alcoholics Anonymous? I mean, that might be somewhere you go when you run out, but I'm not going... I've got a little time left. So anyway, So anyway, so now I'm off to South Carolina, and I'm sure my life is going to get better, okay? Once I get away from those guys I've been hanging around, what a bad influence those guys were. You know, once I could get away from the outside issues and all of that, and I'm going to start it all over in South Carolina. And I got about 2 good weeks under my belt back there, and one night I was just sitting there and I thought, what one drink hurt? I mean, serious. I mean, a lot of people have a drink. So I decided I'd go have a drink. There's a problem there. Okay? Because I sometimes stop, but sometimes the on button stays full blast, you know? And I'm one of those guys that it's just unpredictable. Sometimes I go and I can have a couple beers and I go home, I go to bed. Next time I drink, I might end up in Fresno, you know? And so, you know, so what happened, you know, back there when I was there, they had open containers were okay, which worked very well for me going back and forth to work. They had after-hours bars, which worked sometimes, but those were some tough nights, you know, having to go home, shower real quick, and then try to form sentences when I get to work. And so, anyway, that was starting to deteriorate back there, too, because my drinking, I sometimes develop some problems at work. Attendance has been one of my problems in work. And one of my other problems at work was is I loved quitting. I don't know if you guys are like that, but it was like all I got to do is have a bad day, and I said, I'm quitting this shit. I mean, I don't need this, you know? And so I had quitting on my mind, and my little sister had called, and she had cancer. And they had said that she was dying of cancer. And so what I thought was, for once in my life, I'm going to try and be there for someone else. And so I packed my stuff up, and I moved back to California. And it wasn't very long in California that I was in jail. I had overshot the mark. I hadn't meant to overshoot the mark, but I drank that way. And I remember going to court, and I was a .24. And you know, the thing that bothers me about the .24 isn't that it's like that big compared to some of my heroes in AA. What bothered me is it was just another day. I wasn't celebrating anything. I wasn't bummed out about anything. I was just doing what Jeff does, you know? And so, you know, there I am in jail, and I remember I hadn't been there before, so I thought, you know, I'd seen the movie, so I remember just shaking on the bar saying, "He'll never keep me in here alive." And yeah, not all the people thought I was nearly as funny as I was thinking, and including the people at the jail. And anyway, for those of you, when they let you out of jail, you go to the checkout desk and don't be fooled. You are not out yet, okay? You are not out, okay? Because I remember, because I was at that desk, and I'm thinking, thank goodness I'm going home, and he's handing me my stuff, and I was missing a sock. And he said, "Got everything?" And I said, "No, sir, I'm missing a sock." And he said, "No, sir, you've got everything." And I said, "No. No, we got a pretty easy math thing going on here. Two shoes, 2 feet, 2 socks. And he said, "You like it in there?" And I said, "A little paint, a little fixing up wouldn't be bad at all." 4 more hours. tell you what, when they let me out, my attitude changed. He said, you got everything? Just an extra sock. You know? You know, I was telling you about my little sister, and so there she is. She's going to court with me, and she's worried about me. And I was kind of worried about me too. And so I thought, you know, I got to do something, man. And so I called a buddy of mine, and I thought, Maybe he can help get the heat off of me. And so I called him up, and it was the guy that had come by my house that day and invited me to an AA meeting years before. And I said, well, I got in trouble, and I really want someone to talk to. And he said, come on over. And so I went over there, and he started getting – it was really uncomfortable. He started being, like, really honest, you know, and it was like – a lot of dirty laundry coming my way, and I finally had to tell him, whoa, I don't want to stop drinking. I just want someone to go to court and tell them that I am. No, I don't want to rush into this for crying out loud. And he kind of turned on me, you know. Got a whole new attitude. You know, we don't need a person like you, you know, if you're, you know. You're just conning yourself, and those people saved my life, and we don't need anyone like you in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know what? You know, I'd be glad to do that rather than you coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm thinking, who does he? He don't own AA, you know? What's this? I mean, if I want to go to AA, I'll go to AA. And so the next thing you know, I told him I was going to go to AA. And so he called me up to set up the ride, and I told him, I said, man, he says, so I'll pick you up at about, you know, meet you at Green River at about 6 o'clock. And I said, you know, I was thinking what I could probably use more than an AA meeting. I could probably use a really good attorney, okay? And he said, that's great, Jeff. One of the guys that meets us for the dinner before the meeting's an attorney. I'll pick you up at 6. You know? Now, the guy became my friend. And by the way, I didn't say good attorney. I should have, because then I wouldn't have had to meet him. But anyway, the... oh, someone turned on me out there. I heard a... Ooh. So now I'm thinking my little sister, and I went by the house, and I'd already gone to this meeting. And I need to tell you that it was a little bit awkward, okay? But I got through it, and everything was, and then they wanted to hold hands. I don't know where you guys come from. Not here to judge, but that wasn't what we were doing, you know? It wasn't hold hands, say the Lord's Prayer, you know, do a quick line. We didn't do that stuff, you know? And so it was rather awkward holding two large men's hands, but we got out of that. And so, you know, I headed home, and I thought, I don't think this is probably going to work for me. I was successful. I kept my eyes and ears open because I was pretty sure that they were going to try and sell me something. You know what I mean? There's going to be a cassette package, you know. The next thing you know, you're on a bicycle with a tie. You know what I mean? I'm not... You know, some messed up haircut at the airport. I'm not doing it, you know. So kept my eyes wide open that whole time I was there to make the. So anyway, so I didn't mean to hear anything at that meeting. The one thing I did see is that it said, if you could drink like a gentleman, our hats are off to you. And I thought, wow. Never thought of drinking like a gentleman. Wow, I wonder what that's like. So I decided to give that one a run. Oh, boy. Now, there's some fun. All right. So what we do is we just go ahead and we have a couple of beers. And so I go have tacos and have a couple of beers. And I work fine for, I don't know, about 4 days. And all of a sudden, I guess I forgot to start counting, and I got drunk, and I was at a party, and I heard someone say, look at him, and he just got a 502. And you're thinking, the hell with these people. I don't need this crap in my life. So I went and drank alone. That's pretty decent company there. Reminds me, too, is when my sponsor used to say, remember when you'd be sitting at the bar and you'd look down and you'd think, man, if I ever got that bad, I'd quit drinking. And by the end of the night, you find out he's not such a bad guy after all. Yeah, the problem is one night when you're the guy at the end of the bar, that's a tough night, you know? So anyway, I show up at my little sister's house because I realized at about 1:45 in the morning, the bar was closing and I should probably go by and see her. Because she's dying of cancer, I should probably visit. And so I went by, and it was about 3:15 when I got there. Can't really tell you what I was doing that other 45 minutes, but I did have a couple of bottles, which worked out good because I dropped one of them and it broke on her porch. But luckily, I had bought more than one. And so then she got all pissy. You know, I mean, it was like, you know, come inside, you know. Give me your keys. I was like, okay, here's my keys. And then she said, you need to lay down. I'm not laying down. I'm ready to party. You know, let's all party. And so I guess she didn't really want to party. And then her boyfriend got up, and he acted like he was something tough. And I had to explain to him I'd probably kill him. And, yeah, it was pretty much a delight that evening. And so she wouldn't give me my keys, and so I woke someone else I knew up that had a family. And he came over and picked me up and took me back to the house, and I grabbed another set of keys and went back and got my car. Because, by God, nobody tells me what to do. You know what I mean? So anyway, so the next day I woke up, and I had heard this term, incomprehensible demoralization. I didn't know what that meant. That morning I did. That morning I knew exactly what incomprehensible demoralization was, you know. And what I had also heard at that meeting is when they talked about apologizing to the same people for the same thing so many times that it didn't mean anything anymore. And that was my little sister, and that was my family. And so that day I decided that I was going to show her that I was sincere, and I didn't drink. You know, and I haven't had a drink since that day. But before you get all teary-eyed and start applauding and stuff, let me tell you this, that there were some other things I was doing, okay? And I didn't buy it, so I thought, like, cocaine was social. Anyway, so let me tell you that I'm a firm believer that not drinking or doing drugs is very helpful in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, okay? Really boosts your program. So I remember I go to, you know, so I didn't drink that day. So I go to a meeting, you know, and I'm doing my thing, and the guy asked me to read. So I read at the meeting, and as I come down the podium, he says, hey, Jeff, it gets better when you quit doing drugs. And you go, you don't know what you're talking about. You know what I'm saying? And you don't know what he's talking about. So, you know, and it, so I'm thinking to myself, well, there's all these old people, and they're not that cool, and, you know, but damn, how do they know? I mean, and then I'm thinking they all know. I hate them. You know what I mean? So they're probably all talking behind my back. They think they're funny. That's fine. That's fine. So that's the last time, you know, that's when my sobriety begins, you know, is because what I believe there was God spoke through that man the only way that a guy like me hears. You know, and so I went to him months later, and I said, "Hey, bro, how did you know?" He said, "How did I know what?" And I said, "Remember when I come off the podium?" He said, "Because Federer went quit doing drugs." And he says, "Jeff, I say that to everybody." Yeah, funny guy. I was telling the guys the other night, I was my sponsor, very hands-on, was there for me so much when I was new, and I was so lost. And he would invite me to go eat breakfast with him and before the meeting and buy me pie and things like that. And I remember before I get going here, remember I mentioned the guy that came by to take me to the AA meeting real early that Sunday? And anyway, so I'm talking to him that time, and I said, by the way, why did you come by that morning to invite me to an AA meeting? And he said, well, I've been driving by your house, and all your furniture was on the front lawn. And it had been there for several weeks. And I thought, oh, yeah, we'd had a party, you know, kind of got out of control, things happen, you know, and then you get busy. I mean, you guys understand. And I guess the weeds were growing over the couch or something. Kind of brought attention to myself, evidently, on that one. But so I get invited to go to breakfast, and he says to me, he says, hey, I got this other couple coming along. I hope you don't mind. They're not in the program, but they're good friends of mine. You know, I hope you don't mind. I said, no, that'd be great. So I come in, and there are three of them sitting there, and I said, hi, I'm Jeff. And the lady that's sitting there says, I thought you were like a young child. I've been listening to Joe talk about you. And everything. Yeah, it's funny. That's really funny there. Yeah, he was a sweetheart, that Joe. He says, I remember one time I got there a little bit late. And I said, you know, Joe, he says, hey, Jeff. He says, you and I got to have a talk about that. I said, about what? And he says, your attendance. I said, my attendance? And he says, yeah. He says, what you're telling me is your time is more important than mine. And I'm thinking, I don't remember telling anyone that at all. And I said, I didn't say that. And he says, you don't have to tell me that. Your actions tell me that. When you tell me you're going to be here at a certain time, I expect you to be here. Your time is not more important than mine, and we need to get that clear. I need you to know I was here about an hour before this meeting started, okay? I ain't late. I ain't going through that crap anymore. You know what I mean? You know, some things around here we kind of learn about being, you know, at least for me, is about taking some direction. I took a job here in San Diego, and I was having a difficult time because they knew me in Riverside, and I kind of felt like I kind of belonged, and they knew me, and I came here, and it didn't feel comfortable. You know, I didn't know anyone. I'm looking back thinking this probably was all ego. I thought it was a bigger deal than I was, but it just wasn't familiar to me at all. And he called me, and he said, how was I doing? And I said, I'm okay. And he says, you're going to meetings. I says, nah, not as many, man. I'm kind of backed off a little bit. And he said, why? And I said, Joe, they do it different here, man. He says, they do it different. And I said, yeah. He says, you mean they don't use the big book? And you're thinking, well, he's slow. So I said, no, I mean, sometimes like I'm living at the beach and we go to the meeting and they show up just as the meeting started, you know, and we used to always come real early. And he says, yeah, but you're still going early, right? I said, yeah, but maybe he's not getting it. Remember at our meetings where we would stand in line and we'd make sure that we greeted all of them when we got to the meeting? He says, yeah. And I said, well, they don't do that at that meeting. And he says, yeah, but you are, right? So I tried to give him one more about the whole newcomer thing, and then he did the, yeah, but you are, right? And I thought, this could go on really about all evening. Because the sad thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is this is about what I do. It doesn't really matter. You know, it's none of my business what you think, say, or do. It's important what actions I take. And the sadder thing is that there isn't an advanced program. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like that Henry VIII song, you know, second verse, same as the first. You know, it's like, you know, freak, I've been around here a while. You think maybe I could have, like, a little bit of less action? Or perhaps maybe when you get turned, I don't know, maybe 28, that you could be, like, into intentions? I don't know. I need hope. You know, what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is that what I thought were gifts were just loans. And I'm sure we're not alone, but the economy was very, very tough on us. And we lost a lot of things. And luckily for me is that the things that are most important I haven't lost. And that would be my wife. But, you know, one of the things when I was new that was pushed on me is I didn't want to do much in Alcoholics Anonymous. And my sponsor put me on a little project, and he said, "Jeff, I want you to go do something nice for someone else and not let anyone know." And so I thought about it, I thought, he knows I don't have any money. I hate him. And so so I went to the store, and on my way to the store, there was a little newspaper there. And I ran over and I grabbed it, and I put it on the porch, and I called him up, and I said, "Joe, I did it." And he said, "That's great, Jeff." And I said, "You wanted me to tell you what I did?" And he said, "No." And I said, "No." He goes, "No, the project was to do something nice, not let anyone know." And I said, "Yeah, but if I didn't have to do anything, and I could have told you I did." And he says, "Yeah, but then you wouldn't feel so good." Click. So since I was feeling good. But anyway, getting back to a tough economy, and we've struggled a little bit financially, but one morning my wife goes out to the mailbox, and she comes back, and there's a handwritten envelope. And I don't know about you guys, but usually when you get an envelope and it's handwritten, no one's saying anything nice. You know, your dog's a pain in the ass, we're going to kill you, you know. Something's not going right in someone's life, you know, and you're their target. And so she opened up, she says, "Who's this from?" You know, Kreskin. Kim just gave me a dirty look on that one. Now my wife's supporters are going to gang up later. So she opens up this envelope, and $100 bills fell out. And there was a note. And it said, "Please don't try to find the sender. It would lessen the gift." And she said, "Who do you think sent it?" And I said, "It could be any of 100 or thousands. I don't have any idea at all. Because in Alcoholics Anonymous, you never know. You know? I have a debt to Alcoholics Anonymous for not just saving my life, but for giving me a life. And the only way that I can possibly repay that is by saying yes, and by speaking when I'm asked, and by attending meetings. And I had someone say to me one time that they weren't going to meetings, and he said, "Well, you know, it's a spiritual program." And he says, "You know, I get that at church, so I just go to church now." And evidently I had done that nonverbal communication. And he said, "I can see you don't approve." And I said, "Well, I just need you to know that I'm sure glad the night I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, everyone wasn't in church." Okay? Now, let me tell you that I don't have any problem with church. We do that in addition to. We don't do it instead of. You know? And one of the problems that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous is that we come here and we're takers. And trying to stick out here and be a giver sometimes can be difficult. But that's our job. Our job is that when a newcomer puts out his hand, that we are available. And for that, I am really grateful. Thank you for having me tonight.